And welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, your host. Phil Conlon is here. How are you doing, Phil?
Good afternoon, Phil.
Today we're going to be talking to Vanessa Bealey, who has recently visited Aleppo. And we're going to get an update from somebody we have real faith in, as opposed to all those New York Times, London, whoever's, and who are in Beirut and have back channels through Turkey to terrorists. We're going to actually talk to Vanessa Bealey, who's been on the scene, and tell us about the latest on Aleppo. It's all over your front pages, so you'll know what we're talking about. And we will be speaking later with Stephen Lendman, who's in Chicago, writes terrific articles. There's a station there, Phil, called Progressive Radio Network.
Yes, there is. I've heard it.
Steve Lendman's a man. And he's been on top of this for quite a while, and he's got a lot to say about we got him to focus on the subject of the role of the United Nations, which has been, I'd call, dubious. As I said, and of course, we will be talking to, we hope, Vanessa Bealey shortly. We have our fingers crossed. By the way, there's a shocking headline. It's developed today. A Russian, is it the ambassador
he's
or
the ambassador.
A diplomat? It's
no,
the
he's
ambassador.
He's the ambassador, and he was opening an art show.
An art show
In Ankara.
And was
and he was shot by a person who's been identified as a Turkish policeman, who was, of course, shot dead himself shortly after, right? So he won't be able to answer any questions.
The interviews there will be a little tough. Well, that is a development we're going to have to follow closely. And indeed, I think we might even ask – this is kind of taking us off course, but I think Vanessa Bealey would appreciate an opportunity to comment on this. We are joined, I believe, by Vanessa Bealey of 21st Century Wire. Are you there, Vanessa?
Yeah, I'm here, so good evening or good afternoon.
I'm sorry to keep you up late. We always do this, but...
Oh, no, don't worry. No problem.
You have been to Aleppo, and so many people, so many headlines, and all the big papers and media here are telling us all about Aleppo. None of their correspondents happened to be there, as we know. When were you there, what was your mission? What would be the headlines from Aleppo?
The headline for me would have to be the liberation of Aleppo from the NATO and Gulf state various terrorist-led and militant factions. The majority of the eastern districts of Aleppo were occupied by an estimated 22 brigades of militant factions headed up by Nusra Front, which is a designated terrorist organization. And basically, I spent 3 days last week, the dates sort of fly by when you're in Syria. I spent 3 days literally in each area that I visited. It was within 24 hours of pretty much full liberation. So I saw the areas of Hanano, the old city, even entering into the Umayyad Mosque, literally 18 hours after it had been fully liberated from being used as a sniping center, a military center for particularly Nour al-Din Zinki, who, of course, were the beheaders of the 12-year-old Palestinian child, Abdullah Issa, a couple of months ago. And then also going to Sheikh Saeed, another area which again had been liberated literally the day before that we were allowed to go and visit. And finally, on the last day, to Jibreen, which is the registration center for all the evacuees coming from East Aleppo to register at the center. And we were told that around 95,000 civilians from Eastern Aleppo, as it was liberated, had passed through the registration center. In other words, those who had lost their ID cards, either the terrorists had stolen them or they'd been lost in the various battles and damages to their property. I think the strongest impression that I got, every area I went to, there was this universal relief, joy, gratitude to the Syrian Arab Army and their allies for the liberation from what was effectively, according to all the testimonies that I received and videos, that they were being released from 4 years of incarceration under a Nusra Front-led regime, during which they had been deliberately starved. All of the humanitarian aid that was coming in was being withheld and stockpiled by the militants and the terrorists and rationed to the civilians. Summary executions. We were told of terrorists firing upon civilians trying to escape via the humanitarian corridors that had been set up by the Syrian and Russian governments and organizations. We were told of one incident during one of these attempted escapes by the civilians when they had been shot at, when a woman went down on her knees and begged for food, and she was shot in the mouth. This was only one in the catalog of atrocities that were described to us by the civilians who had just been released from prison. That is the overriding impression that I had from being there.
We're speaking to Vanessa Bailey, 21st Century Wire, and I urge everyone to go to that site and to get the latest news. Now we have a problem of the way this is being reported. I wonder if you could explain what the altercations have been in the past couple of days, because one thing I've noticed is that the media here is confusing the issue of the liberation, that is, of people finally being released from the control of the al-Nusra people. They are mushing that in with the story of this enclave run by al-Nusra and treating them as though they're the refugees, the way they write their stories. Yeah. Do you get that impression?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think it was a CNN report that I heard, I think, a couple of days ago, where they describe what is fundamentally the evacuation of the Nusra Front-led terrorist factions and militant factions. I'm making a very clear delineation there, because obviously Nusra Front is a internationally designated terrorist organization. Those like Nur al-Din Zinki and Ahrar al-Sham have not yet been officially designated terrorist organizations, despite the various ethnic cleansing programs that they have been carrying out in Syria. And so we saw CNN describing these factions as residents escaping East Aleppo to the safety of Turkey, whereas, in fact, of course, the reality is that these are terrorist-led factions that have been evacuated underneath the presidential amnesty decree from East Aleppo to Idlib. And so, yes, you're right. There's this complete distortion and twisting of the facts on the ground. And, of course, this, to some extent, is protectionism on behalf of the corporate media, who for the last 4.5 years, of course, have been lying to us about the situation in East Aleppo, describing what are effectively militant factions as civilians. They certainly haven't been voicing anything on behalf of the civilians inside East Aleppo. That's very clear from the testimonies that are now coming out. What they've been effectively doing is completely ignoring the voices of 1.5 million Syrian civilians in West Aleppo, claiming that they are amplifying the voices of civilians in East Aleppo, whereas in reality they were muting the voices of the real civilians in East Aleppo in order to amplify the voices of the NATO and Gulf state-funded militant factions led by the terrorist organization Nusra Front.
And again, we're speaking to Vanessa Bailey. And I know that you have taken a keen interest in, and you're the matter of fact, in my mind, the person most responsible for exposing a so-called civil defense organization, which is engaged in identity theft. They called themselves the Syrian, I think, civil defense, and they were operating in East Aleppo. You must have gone looking to see how they were doing.
Yeah, I mean, that was one.
I forgot to say white helmets. The magic phrase.
Yes.
I guess it turned into what helmets.
Yeah.
Probably not a lot of helmets around these days.
Yeah, well, I think what helmets is probably a lot more relevant, actually. Again, this was very interesting, and what was quite interesting was that Lizzie Phelan, for RT, was pretty much on the ground at the same time that I was, and we were sort of in different areas but following each other around. And we were both asking the question of all the civilians that we met, among other questions, obviously. But the majority of the civilians that I spoke to, when I asked them if they knew who the White Helmets were, and we described who they were, what they were, they all pretty much said, no, they'd never seen anything like this. Then they qualified it when we said to them, well, look, were there any paramedics, any sort of humanitarian assistance on the ground? And they said, yeah, there was the civil defense, but it was the terrorist civil defense. Mm-hmm. In other words, they were working pretty much exclusively with the terrorists.
Mm-hmm.
Most people said to me, look, they didn't help civilians. They were working with the terrorists. We didn't actually dare to approach the terrorists for any medical care or treatment. And I actually saw a number of injuries that, you know, from people that had been shot, people that had broken limbs, and simply had had no treatment. For the 3 or 4 years under imprisonment. So that, again, also completely debunks the whole sort of hospital scenario, the last hospital scenario that we've had rammed down our throats, really, for the last sort of 6 months.
Yeah.
What they were saying was that these hospitals, whether they were temporary field hospitals that were run by the White Helmet or whether they were existing hospitals that had been occupied by the terrorists, civilians were not being treated. And, in fact, Lizzie Phelan, I think, spoke to two civilians. One said that he had taken his daughter into a White Helmet temporary field hospital building, and they had actually killed his daughter, I think, by misadministering the injection. It wasn't deliberate, but then, you know, that puts into question, are these people, these White Helmets, genuine paramedics?
Mm-hmm.
Another man said that they did not save people from the rubble. They left them under the rubble to die. So these were two very clear testimonies completely contradicting the White Helmet promotional taglines that mm-hmm. they always use to promote themselves in a public event.
Mm-hmm.
Physically, we saw no evidence of them. This was the extraordinary thing. This organization that has been responsible for the majority of the propaganda facilitating further intervention, ceasefires, calls for no-fly zones, calls for further sanctions on the Syrian people. This organization that has been basically underpinning the NATO Gulf state war effort against Syria
mm-hmm.
completely disappeared. I mean, it was sort of extraordinary. It was almost a mirage moment, whereas
yes.
you know, up until then, the White Helmets had been the organization that allegedly had saved 76,000 lives. Well, where were these 76,000 lives?
Yes.
I mean, it's a very puzzling or perhaps not so puzzling when one considers the background to this organization. But
yeah.
certainly from on the ground in East Aleppo, there was very little sign of them. The one other point to make as well, I spoke to the head of the Syrian Arab Red Crescent that had been working extensively in East Aleppo for the last 4 years. And they said that they had also never witnessed the White Helmets carrying out any humanitarian work.
Mm-hmm. No, I think their business was largely public relations. Actually, they were touring Canada, so they weren't all available to help the people. As Aleppo was liberated, some of them were smart enough to be in Canada. I noticed, by the way, that the founder got an OBE at the Buckingham Palace practically on the day that Aleppo was liberated.
Yep. Services to the empire, I guess.
They wanted to make sure he got that before the whole thing caved in. Speaking to Vanessa.
I mean, you know, but. Sorry, go ahead.
I'm sorry I interrupted you, but I will just remind people, it's Vanessa Beely, 21st Century Wire. I better ask you this. The Palmyra story, how does that fit in, and what do you know about the prospects of the liberating Palmyra?
Palmyra is a very fluid situation. I think what it was an attempt, and again, I think it clearly demonstrates that there is a correlation between the United States' efforts against Syria and its communication with ISIS on the ground. Obviously, we've seen this previously with the U.S. coalition bombing of the Syrian Arab Army soldiers in Deir ez-Zor, which allowed ISIS to advance. Perhaps coincidentally, but it was a very convenient coincidence for ISIS at the time. Mm-hmm. And at this same juncture, where the NATO and Gulf state backed various militant factions, terrorist factions, were obviously about to meet one of their, well, if not the biggest defeat of this conflict,
mm-hmm.
Suddenly. ISIS were making advances in Palmyra, which, of course, could have potentially distracted the Syrian Arab Army effort towards Palmyra and away from Aleppo. So in my view, you know, this again demonstrates a degree of collusion between the U.S. coalition and ISIS on the ground in Syria.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're seeing now is a sort of very much a back-and-forth battle between the Syrian Arab Army and ISIS. Reports are conflicting as to whether ISIS are in full control or whether the Syrian Arab Army has taken it back. But I think there will probably be a big push now to obviously retake it fully.
In terms of the sort of U.S.-based propaganda for this war, and I noticed, by the way, John Kerry suddenly is like calling the East Aleppo barbarians. He's calling them brave and heroic and how they fight. It's an amazing situation. But an additionally to me amazing thing, and I want to ask your opinion, is that one of our headlines in the Globe and Mail and Toronto Star and others was that Ban Ki-moon describing Aleppo as a synonym for hell. You spoke to Aleppans. Isn't this a little shocking? Maybe we should all be celebrating that he, like Obama, is going out the door.
Yeah, it's extraordinary, isn't it? I mean, what are they describing as hell? I mean, they are correct in the sense that the civilians in East Aleppo were living in hell. They mm-hmm. were living under effectively an al-Qaeda regime. Mm-hmm. So they were living under imprisonment, under starvation, under brutality, under summary execution, if they showed any allegiance to either the Syrian state or the Syrian army. I interviewed one 13-year-old boy who had finally managed to come out of hiding, basically. His father, who was in the Syrian Arab Army, had been killed in the battle for Aleppo prison. And his two younger brothers, he was 13 years old, his two younger brothers, 8 and 9 years old, had been murdered by the terrorists, but in fact by the FSA, sorry, correct me there, very early on. So the so-called moderate rebels had executed two children because mm-hmm. their father was a member of the Syrian Arab Army. He had then gone into hiding and was now finally able to sort of come out into the daylight. And that was another point that I would make. Many of the children obviously were emaciated. They were clearly suffering from various skin diseases as a result, probably of malnutrition. The very strange thing was that they were, it almost looked like they'd been living underground, and many of them told us that they had gone into hiding to a huge degree. They had had no education for the last 4 years. And one of the things that we saw very clearly was the cleanup operations were starting almost immediately. We spoke to a school director in Hanano who showed us that the school had been taken over as a Sharia court by Nusra Front and a weapons store they had managed to clean out the whole school and were about to reopen it the next day. So within about 48 hours of liberation, for the children to finally get back to education. So the howl that, that Ban Ki-moon is describing, which he's obviously accrediting to what he would call the rebels, whereas in reality, those rebels were inflicting hell not only upon the civilians of East Aleppo, of course, but upon the civilians of West Aleppo, who were under a constant, near constant deluge of mortars, hell cannon missiles, which are the gas canisters filled with explosives, glass, shrapnel, nails, chemical weapons, that were being fired into residential areas in West Aleppo. I think Ava Bartlett gave the figure of 11,000 that she got from the Aleppo Medical Association of 11,000 deaths in West Aleppo that have been virtually ignored by Western media, by the UN, and by our government. I mean, you know, this is, it's an extraordinary situation. I almost feel that we're living in a parallel universe where reality is just going into an Orwellian echo chamber created by the UN, the think tanks, the NGOs, the corporate media, and our governments. And ultimately what is happening is the universal, the wholesale dehumanization of the Syrian people.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank goodness you, Vanessa Beely, were there, and we're very proud we could talk to you. Thank you very, very much.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much, Phil.
Okay, doc. Bye-bye. That's Vanessa Beely. 21st Century Wire. We're very glad we could talk to her.